Chris Rongi, Amy Marks-Cors, The Chris and Amy Show.
Check it out.
St. Louis, Mound City, we are going to have a great day today.
On 104.1 FM.
Let's take it from the top.
KMOX.
Good morning, friends. Welcome into a lovely Tuesday in St. Louis. It is The Chris and Amy Show, and we do have a phone number. We've paid our bill. 314-436-7900. You may call, you may text. You may also watch us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. We're at Chris Amy KMOX, and we invite you to leave us messages directly from the Odyssey app where you can listen to us live.
Time now for the top of the order. The top three stories everyone will be talking about.
St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department is reporting a significant reduction in crime. We have seen those numbers go down from 2025. Thomas Apt, who is a criminologist, is going to join the show at 9:30.
And vehicle inspections could be going away in Missouri. Is that good? Is that bad? We'll talk with auto expert Greg Damon at 11:30.
And the wild card round of the NFL playoffs is officially over. It is done with Aaron Rodgers getting bounced last night. Oh, poor guy.
Poor guy.
Yeah, Steelers lost. Texans move on. Divisional round is set. So we'll have more games Saturday and Sunday. Also, the Blues take on the Canes. That will be tonight. And by the way, speaking of the divisional round, we will have on this station Sunday evening, 5:30?
Yeah.
Bears and the Rams. Bears and the Rams.
That's right, baby.
We're going to have that game right here.
I thought I was expecting a little bit of fanfare.
There's no fanfare,
There's no fanfare.
Yeah, and it's perfect because we asked the question this week. Does your hatred for Stan Kroenke give you permission to root for a Chicago team now? Because the Bears will be facing the stupid Rams, the stupid Kroenkes. So there's your opportunity. Go get it. We'll have the game. 5:15, I believe the broadcast starts, but kickoff is scheduled for 5:30 Sunday. There it is.
There you go.
Man, I was waiting for it.
See, it's patriotic.
You get a fight song. Think about the package of becoming a Bears fan. You get occasional constant heartache, and you get a fight song.
I would say moderate to severe heartache.
And the uniform scheme's not bad. I like it.
See,
the navy and the orange.
I love the uniform scheme.
Yeah, I think it's great.
Because the navy and the orange is sharp, but it also is retro. And I like uniforms that always have a retro vibe. Yeah. And I just feel like the Bears effectively do that. And no, I think that song is patriotic. It just feels like
patriotic.
God bless the Bears and God bless America. Like, that's what I want to say when I hear. I feel like I should cross my heart when I hear that song.
And hope to die. I think it is. This is a great gateway. You know, this is the gateway city. Here's your gateway into Bears fandom this Sunday when they play the Rams.
Don't you think, now that the Bears have had a good season, it is fair to say,
for a change,
yeah, that it is moderate to severe disappointment? Because severe. No, but I mean in general. It's been severe disappointment.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, now it's moderate. Like you said, you're being careful.
Mm-hmm. Like, for the last 13 years of the Rams being in St. Louis, it was just disappointment. You had a couple of 8-8 seasons, which it's like not playing at all. When you finish a year at an even 500, you might as well not have even done it. Because you started the year 500, you finished the year 500. What good is that?
Yeah.
So, mostly disappointment. And then the bigger disappointment, and yesterday was that the anniversary of the vote. And I was watching some of the old, it was Martin Kilcoyne had posted some video from the day that the vote happened, where the NFL owners voted 30-2 to move the team to Los Angeles, and just how sad everybody was. You know, and that happened 10 years ago yesterday.
I remember when the Rams got here, so obviously not the 10-year anniversary of sadness, but back when they did come to St. Louis, and the whole idea of the PSL, and you were saying they have
a lot of teams do that.
Have that, and maybe St. Louisans, maybe we just didn't have that when you had the St. Louis Cardinals, because I feel like a lot of people were surprised or unfamiliar with this idea of PSLs. I don't know how groundbreaking it was back in the 90s or if it was at all, but I remember...
It was a new idea to me. I had not heard of that before.
Because my aunt and uncle, they got the PSL. And I'm like, so you got season tickets? And they're like, no, not yet. And they're like, we have the right to season tickets. And I just didn't understand. And I was young enough where I guess it makes sense that I was a little confused about the whole PSL, meaning they still didn't have season tickets, but they eventually got those season tickets. And I still think with Starbucks and the pumpkin spice latte being PSL. Referred to as the PSL, the original PSL was when the Rams came here, the personal seat license.
That's right. And now for me, the PSL does mean pumpkin spice latte. Yeah. It no longer means football games.
I still think of football games first. And then because I'm like, what is Starbucks doing with PSLs? Is that so you can sit in their cafes?
For a limited time, you can. You can't just sit there all day.
Yeah, you can't. Okay, I know you mentioned that we'll be having Thomas Apt in, the founding director of the Violence Reduction Center. And also, he was a co-founder of Save Lives Now, the program, the crime-fighting program that we have here in St. Louis.
And we've spoken to him before. And going back to
going
the
back
old
to
show,
Charlie Brennan. Yeah, for sure. And really, if you have not read his book, Bleeding Out, it's about stopping violent crime in our cities. It is so good. It is nonpartisan. How nonpartisan? So nonpartisan that everyone from the National Review to the New York Times to the LA Times to the Wall Street Journal have written about how great this book is and how effective the proposals are. Like, it's really, really cool. And so anyway, we'll be talking to him. And I was just thinking of the U.S. figure skating championships that we had here in St. Louis and how great it was to see the Olympic branding and the city of St. Louis and the whole NBC crew. Was Hoda here? I think Hoda was here. Hoda Kotb was here. And it was just fun. And the city really did look beautiful because when you pan from the arch coming up over at Busch Stadium, Enterprise all lit up, you know, you have the green lights, but then you also see the wheel at Union Station and then Energizer Park. It was a really pretty scene. And obviously you see the security, right? You see cop cars around the area. And I was just thinking, with the level of security for something like that, how bumped up is it? Because you assume it's super bumped up, right? You don't want something to go wrong if you're hosting a multi-day nationally televised event. And at the same time, nothing did go wrong. It went off swimmingly. How does that make you feel about crime in St. Louis, or for people who are uncomfortable coming to St. Louis? Do you think a lot of people are only comfortable during big events? Are some people not comfortable during big events? I don't know. I know this is the conversation that we have back and forth, but people talk about crime in St. Louis, but I tell you what, when the Cardinals are in the playoffs, nobody cares. Busch Stadium is full.
Oh,
and if your favorite artist is coming to Enterprise, and when the Blues won the Stanley Cup, how many people did we have at that parade?
Yeah, I mean, it was packed.
Yeah.
So I you're right about that. People do use that as an excuse for not going to games. It's too dangerous. I won't go to games anymore. I mean, if they're good, you'll be here.
Yeah.
And that's kind of always been true.
And I'm not downplaying that there is crime. And I would even say maybe you could be more worried about traffic violence, right? Like that people running red lights when there are crowds, like we saw after the Drake concert here when a mom and the daughter from Chicago got killed. So I know there's beefed up security when you have an event like we have the U.S. Figure Skating Championships.
And even if you have the beefed up security, you can't prevent it. You can't prevent 100%
right.
All bad things from happening. Something sometimes is going to happen. But the city has gotten better. The numbers are reflecting that. I think the big question is, why don't we talk about it? And I think I know the answer to it is there are multiple reasons, I think. One of them is it isn't convenient politically for some people to do that. They love to trash St. Louis and continue to trash them over and over and over again because it serves a political purpose. I think that's number one. And number two, it's almost like people have this, and maybe these things are kind of related, but people have their idea of what St. Louis is and anything that goes against what they already believe, well, they're just not going to talk about it. They're not going to say, oh, what, crime is down? Wow, that's awesome. Great job, St. Louis. Way to go. You're moving in the right direction. It just kind of gets pushed aside.
And I think,
because it's not what they believe the city to be.
And I also think that you can be, I'm more in the middle in the sense of, is it safe or is it dangerous? And two things can be true at once, meaning sometimes they're safer than others. For instance, I never feel scared at all coming down here for an event, right? Because we know there's safety in numbers. There's safety in people. Having people around automatically makes things safer. And then also, I work downtown every day. I'm not afraid to drive downtown. Am I smart? Do I lock my doors? Yeah, but that's what you should do in any city, right? I lock my doors. I'm not just sitting in my parked car, but I feel safe coming downtown. I think also there are moments like if it's dark and there's not a big event or I'm leaving before the event is over and I'm walking to my car by myself. Yeah, I'm not super comfortable because in general, there aren't a ton of people walking downtown. So I think two things can be true, that it is safer than a lot of people think, but there are still moments where it can be unsafe if you're not smart, which is like any city. But I think over and over again, like a broken record, it hinges on people walking around.
Yeah.
Walking around.
And again, the numbers are the numbers. They are what they are. If they are showing a reduction in crime, that means a reduction in crime is happening. And Kansas City, a lot of this is perception because people have already got it in their head that St. Louis is the most dangerous place on earth and you don't want to go there ever for any reason because you'll die if you do. But Kansas City has very, very similar crime problems to us. Extremely. They're not very different from us at all. Yet we don't talk about Kansas City the same way we talk about St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a ton of perception that goes into this when the reality is showing us that things are getting better. And I mean, I would contend that we can have this argument, and we have, that they haven't been as bad as has been suggested for many, many years. But the improvement is what we're looking for, even if it's incremental, even if it's slow. We just want things to get better. If it takes time, great. It takes time. It just needs to be moving in the right direction, and it appears to be. So we'll talk to Thomas Apt about this. What is St. Louis doing that is right? Are these numbers real? Is there reason to be optimistic about what's going on? Well, Thomas Apt will join us at 9:30. Last night, pretty special event regarding Blues alumni and some Hall of Famers who have been introduced. Amy Marks, Kors, and I will talk about that when we come back on 104.1 FM KMOX.
It was a very special night at the MAC downtown last night with the Blues Hall of Fame ceremony with Al Arbor, the original Blue, Alexander Steen, and Barrett Jackman being inducted into the Blues Hall of Fame, getting their blue jackets, and Kelly Chase being given the True Blue Award for his contribution to the game, the city, the community, his teammates. And I watched every second of this Hall of Fame ceremony. Just hearing the stories, especially Kelly Chase, talking about playing in St. Louis, hearing Brett Hull talk about the role that Kelly Chase played in his life. Cujo, Curtis Joseph was there. And Kelly Chase talked about being kind. And he said he talked to his buddy Garth Brooks, who was there. He's like, man, how hard is it to be nice to people? And how, as a professional athlete, he had learned, you know, to talk to fans and sign autographs and just be kind and be there for them. And he said it came naturally, but you also knew how to conduct yourself. It was so important to get involved in the community. And, you know, Kelly Chase started the Gateway Locomotives, like a special hockey team in the community, which is incredible. And he just said, well, this is how we were raised. You know, we were raised, my mom raised me this way. And Curtis Joseph said, well, I wasn't raised that way. Curtis Joseph had a pretty tough life. So I wasn't raised that way, but I learned it from you. And to hear these NHL Hall of Famers talk about how Kelly Chase, you know, helped them, even, you know, you're a kid and you have to get a bank account or rent furniture for your apartment. It's like, you know, you're 18, 19 years old. You don't know how to do any of this stuff. And so how they really were a family. And Brett Hull, I mean, to see the Hall of Famer Brett Hull tear up talking about Kelly Chase was pretty amazing.
You know, when Twister and those guys, they came up, you know, to stay when we knew that they were going to be an integral part of our team. It was kind of like insta karma with Kelly and I, and we became extremely close friends. And it kills me now, but you talked about Susie and how she taught us what the St. Louis Blues was all about. But all of a sudden, I from out of nowhere, I became this guy and this St. Louis Blue scoring all these goals. And it could have went a myriad of ways. But without him, he taught me how I was supposed to act, all the things we were supposed to do away from the game, the way we treated our fans and the people and the community and whatever it was, you know, he was my guiding light that way. And so I've never told him that, but I think he knows. And, you know, you asked Curtis about what you think, and when you think about Kelly Chase, and it's the love of the St. Louis Blues and the city of St. Louis. And that sums it up right there.
I mean, pretty emotional night. And they're panning. The Blues did a great job putting on the production. They aired it on Matrix Midwest and on the Blues YouTube channel. Like I said, I watched the whole thing. I think if you missed it, you can go back and watch it on the Blues YouTube channel. But panning across the audience to the people that were there, all these Blues alumni, obviously the current Blues team, but especially the guys that played with Kelly Chase, and seeing Tony Twist, who's still like a beast. I mean, he's like, he's huge.
I remember he had a photo shoot, and I think it was before the motorcycle accident. Mm-hmm. And this is just a complete silly sidebar, but he...
Was it right before the motorcycle accident?
I don't know, but it was, and I don't remember if it was an SI article or something like that. And it's a forward-facing shot where he's on a motorcycle with his shirt off.
Yeah.
And he's facing the camera. And I was like, that is the whitest dude I've ever seen.
So
that guy is huge.
It was actually, he was talking, not last night, but on the Ice Guardians podcast with Kelly Chase, right before the motorcycle accident, like right before camp, because I think it happened in the summer. He said he truly was in the best shape of his life. He was 265 pounds and like 6% body fat, which would make sense if that was the SI photo. He said, I was in such good shape when that motorcycle accident happened, and which was really, really bad, by the way. His belt buckle got hooked on the handlebars of his motorcycle, ripped his pants off, broke his pelvis. I mean, really, really bad. But to see this absolute unit sitting there and smiling, laughing from the memories and tears streaming down his face was really moving. I was tearing up. And then, of course, the other Blue Jackets were there. Al McGinnis, you know, Chris Pronger. Obviously, we mentioned Brett Hull. And Kelly Chase went first for the True Blue Award before they did the Hall of Fame induction with Alexander Steen and Barrett Jackman and Al Arbor. And Chris Kerber and Joey Vitale were hosting it. And Kerbs is like, well, good luck following that. And it was true.
Yeah.
You know, how are you going to follow that?
You know, those names for me, like many other St. Louisans, just nostalgic names. Mm-hmm. Because when I was growing up in the 80s, I did not pay a lot of attention to hockey. It was all Cardinals for me. I mean, that was our year. That was our decade. Three World Series appearances. They won one. I mean, I was brought into the world, and the Cardinals were basically going and winning a World Series just a couple of years later. And I just did not pay much attention to hockey. And it wasn't until high school and I had a friend who was just really into it. And just hearing him talk about the names, you know, Kelly J. He's like, you know, Kelly J. Yeah. Oh, man. Tony Twist, Brett Hull. I mean, everybody knew Brett Hull, obviously. Adam Oates, like all these guys, right? And so then it just sort of forced me to get into it. And those names will always be nostalgic. And it sort of bums me out that I missed the first half of these careers because I wasn't paying as close attention as I should have been.
No, I mean, and I was really, really into football when I was younger. So I feel like I was late to the game even at 12 years old. You know, I felt late to the game because I was so into football before then. But it was very cool. Also, quick note, T.J. Oshie came back for the crowd because of his time with Alexander Steen and the stories he talked about when they put Steen and David Backus and Oshie on a line and just the special memories those guys had. It was fun. If you didn't see it, go back and watch it.
We got a conversation with Thomas Apt, the founding director of the Violence Reduction Center and author of Bleeding Out. He is a criminologist, and he will join us next to talk about St. Louis, the progress the city is making in terms of crime, what's next, and if we should be happy about what we're seeing. Thomas Apt is next on KMOX. As we have been talking about this morning, the St. Louis Police Department has been reporting some decreases in crime around the city. It's been an effort that's been, well, ongoing for seemingly decades here, and it looks like some progress is being made. How we got here, what's to come, these are all questions that we do not yet have answers for. To help us through them, Thomas Apt is a founding director of the Violence Reduction Center, author of the book Bleeding Out, and associate research professor with the University of Maryland Criminology. Thomas Apt is with us on KMOX. Thomas, appreciate your time. How are you?
I'm well. Pleasure to be with you.
So just a quick overall, your thoughts on the numbers that you are seeing coming out of St. Louis?
Well, I think the numbers are encouraging. You know, you have a 6% reduction in homicides this year, but you also have a 35% reduction over 3 years. And that's good news. It's definitely part of a larger nationwide trend in reductions in crime and violence that we're seeing in city after city. But, you know, the city of St. Louis and the region are doing a lot of things right. And that's why we're seeing the numbers go down.
Yeah, and I'm looking at a news story here from Fox 2 in St. Louis that the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department reported that significant decrease in crime in 2025 with overall crime rate reduction at 16% compared to 24 and 28% compared to 2023. So some really encouraging numbers. And I'll ask this, as I know a lot of people listening, St. Louis has a reputation for being a dangerous city or for a violent city. Is it normal for perception or even optimism to lag behind data when the data does show a reduction in crime?
Yes, it's very normal. In the 90s, where we saw, you know, huge drops in crime, it took, you know, many, many years for people to sort of recognize the new normal and to really acknowledge that cities were slowly becoming safer. So it's not unusual, but, you know, if the numbers keep going in the same direction, I think the change in people's quality of lives will be deniable. And I think if people really think and look hard, there's really simply a major difference between today and what we were seeing in 2020 and 2021 with major surges in homicides and shootings.
You said that St. Louis is doing a lot right. What are those things they're doing?
Well, I think it's a combination of a few things. You've got strong leadership in the police department with Chief Tracy, who's been, you know, really improving a lot of police strategies with, you know, more targeted, more strategic anti-crime efforts. You've also got a lot more stability in the prosecutor's office. There was a lot of controversy with the previous prosecutor. Thankfully, the city and the region have pushed back, pushed past that. But you've also got a lot of great work by community groups, specifically violence intervention work groups that are, you know, getting ahead of shootings and killings and mediating conflicts and providing services to those who need it. And you've got umbrella groups bringing folks together, like Save Lives Now, which is part of the effort that that I'm involved in and the VRC is involved in.
And am I correct in saying that you helped create Save Lives Now?
I think that myself and the Violence Reduction Center facilitated local leaders creating Save Lives Now. Save Lives Now is led by the City of St. Louis, the County of St. Louis, and other regional leaders. The East-West Gateway asked the VRC to come in and help these leaders come together with a unified anti-violence strategy that had elements of enforcement, had elements of supports and services, and was something evidence-based and nonpartisan that they could really get behind. And we helped to develop the strategy. But ultimately, you know, it was the local leaders, it was folks in law enforcement, and it was you know, impacted community residents. We brought all of these folks together in 2023, who made the final decisions.
Talking with Thomas Apt on KMOX, and we have heard the phrase many times that you cannot arrest your way out of crime issues in a city, that it takes a lot of other stuff. And you've mentioned a lot of other programs, but just to give people some specifics maybe of what that actually looks like, what does it mean? What do these crime prevention organizations and programs mean for people beyond, hey, you got to arrest somebody who's committed a crime and then prosecute them, and that's the end of it?
Sure. Here's what Save Lives Now is doing. The initiative, working with the city governments and a lot of other partners, including business and philanthropy partners, what we're doing is we're putting together three components: focused deterrence, cognitive behavioral interventions, and street outreach. Okay, now what does that mean in plain English? What it means is we've put together a strategy with our partners where we're identifying the highest risk people who are at the highest risk for shooting or being shot, and we're providing them with both a clear message of accountability. If you continue being involved in violence, you will be held fully accountable. But we're also providing a message of empathy. It doesn't have to be this way. You can make a different decision, and supports and services are available if you want to change. And to make that offer of both punishment and support credible, you need a lot of different partners. Some of those partners are in government with law enforcement, but some of those partners are in the community, and outside law enforcement. And Save Lives Now has been successful at bringing folks together and keeping them together. And, you know, that's not always so easy in any city, but especially in, you know, St. Louis and the St. Louis region.
You know, and just to kind of focus on what you said with focused deterrence, and I believe you call it hot spots or hot people in your book, an example of that you give from 2012, 2013 in Oakland, California, when they reviewed 18 months of homicide data and found that only 400 individuals, or 0.1% of Oakland's population, were at the highest risk for violence at any particular time. So you're saying, like, we can really pinpoint where these shootings or violent crime are happening and focus all of our efforts on that instead of diluting it across areas that may not need that attention.
That's exactly right. You don't want to stigmatize the whole city with a broad brush of violence. The violence is being disproportionately committed by a very small network of people in a surprisingly small number of micro locations or hotspots. And so you don't have to boil the ocean. You just need to focus on the small number of people and places and offer both a carrot and a stick. And I think that's one of the things that, in this hyper-politicized environment that we have today, is really hard to get across. You know, you have a bunch of folks who are, you know, really focused on tough on crime and enforcement, enforcement, enforcement. And then you have other folks who are, you know, only focused on social justice and program, program, program. And the reality and what the science says is you absolutely need both. And, you know, just think about how we raise our kids. You know, we don't raise our kids with all punishments or all rewards. There's got to be some stick and there's got to be some carrot. Folks who are at the highest risk for violence are no different.
Thomas, we have, and you mentioned politicization here when it comes to crime, and we know that because people run on it, whether it's at the local level or at the national level. They say, we're going to get tough on crime here, and everything's out of control, and we're going to fix this. But as you mentioned, the national numbers and how it has improved around the country, can a president have a lot to do with what crime numbers are nationally?
You know, presidents can influence crime numbers, but I don't think that they drive them all by themselves. You know, we talk a lot these days about the economy. You know, the president can influence the economy, but they can't control the economy. Crime is very, very similar. And what we saw, you know, immediately after the pandemic was a massive investment by the president and by Congress of Recovery Act funds, ARPA funds. And a lot of those funds were put into balanced public safety measures, measures that improved policing, but also involved community-based organizations. And the city of St. Louis made a bunch of smart decisions with its ARPA dollars and those ARPA investments. In fact, Save Lives Now, a lot of the trainings that we're doing, we've trained over 200 individuals across both the city and the county, are with city ARPA dollars. And we've had a lot of success, but those ARPA funds are running out. And so, you know, we're going to need to find a way to have other stakeholders step up and fill the gap.
We mentioned national trends and how that spike in crime post-pandemic and the recent decrease in crime does follow national trends. And when we look at St. Louis and the decrease in crime that we saw, are we on pace with everybody else? Are we behind? Are we ahead? And what should we read into that?
I think for 23 and 24, the city was on pace or even ahead. But then in 2025, while violent crime, homicides, and shootings are down, they're not down quite as significantly. At least homicides aren't down quite as significantly as elsewhere in the country. But consider what happened in the region in 2025. We had political transitions. We had political controversies. We had the tornadoes. We also saw, you know, we also are facing federal cuts in funding for CVI programs. The city and the region have weathered a lot of literal and figurative storms over the past year. And yet folks are still coming to the table and doing the hard work, and the numbers are still coming down. So one of the things that I worry about nationally is I worry whether, you know, especially with the federal government removing a lot of the funding, you know, whether this downward trend in crime and violence can continue. But in St. Louis, I'm actually pretty optimistic that there's a lot more progress to be made, simply because last year, 2025, was so difficult, and yet the city hung in there and continued doing the good work.
With the reduction of the federal funding and your concern for it, how, what sort of lag would there be on that? Would it take a couple of years before we start to see what those results are?
Well, I think we're going to need to find new funding sources. We're going to need money from philanthropy, from business. The city, the county, and others are going to need to step up even more than they have, although they have dedicated funds. We're going to need to come together. This isn't going to be, you know, I often say that reducing violence is a team sport. And, you know, a team can't be successful unless the players work together. And so that's what we've been doing, and that's what we need to continue to do. But I do think, you know, we've had some good support from some of our leaders in business, from the Municipal League and from East West Gateway. Those have been some of our early funders. And we also had funding from Greater St. Louis, Inc. and the Regional Business Council. But we're going to need more people to step up, and we're going to need them to step up greater, because I think we've proven that Save Lives Now can make a difference and can be a force multiplier for the good work that the city and the county and other folks around the region are doing. But it doesn't happen for free. and we got to invest in what's working.
As you say, this is a team sport. I've had this feeling, and maybe I'm wrong about this, that people who don't live in the city proper a lot of times look at St. Louis like, hey, you fix your problems and then maybe we'll come hang out there or we'll spend money there or whatever. Does it take people outside the immediate city to want to be involved in this effort to reduce crime, or is this just a city specific issue? You guys figure it out and then, you know, maybe we'll come along for the ride later.
Well, you know, I think we believe very strongly that this is a regional issue and that the entire region's destiny is sort of tied together. And so while most of the work needs to happen in the city, and, you know, in the county and also in East St. Louis, for instance, those are the three areas that have the most homicides and shootings. We need everybody's support, and we need a lot of the political bickering to stop, the sort of red versus blue, law enforcement versus community, left versus right kind of stuff. What we need is a consensus around public safety, that there's a sensible center here that's, you know, supported by the science, and we just need to do what makes sense. And we need to focus on solving problems and not winning our arguments. And that's what we're trying to promote with Save Lives Now.
I just had a quick question on the team sport thing as well, because I know St. Louis has extreme fragmentation in policing, because we have so many different police districts and departments. Does that affect the teamwork at all, make it harder, or no?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, because I think sometimes in the city and in the region, there's this sort of feeling like, you know, why can't we get out of our own way? Why is this so hard? And I think it's important to acknowledge there's structural reasons for this. The policing systems in the region are very fragmented for historical reasons, but it's not just policing, it's all forms of government. And that makes the collaboration that has to happen to make progress on these issues harder. And so, you know, I think that there's nothing. Folks in St. Louis and around the region need to work harder than they more ordinarily would to collaborate because of these structural barriers. But it's important to note these barriers are not insurmountable. As long as folks are willing to work together, they can be overcome.
Thomas Apt, founding director of the Violence Reduction Center, we appreciate your time. Thank you, as always, for speaking with us.
Pleasure.
Now, did you see this with Chris and Amy?
Well, it is a bit grim, but the number one app in China currently, the number one downloaded app in China currently is called Are You Dead? And so what happens is it requires users to check in with the app every 2 days to confirm that they're still breathing and scrolling. And if you don't check in with the app every 2 days, it reaches out to a designated emergency contact and lets them know something could be wrong. They say one reason why this is so popular is that more and more people in China are living alone. So China's population declined in 2024, and the share of single-person households rose almost 20%. Research predicts that there may be as many as 20 million people living alone in China by 2030. And so they have these apps in case you just die.
Do they have an estimation of how many people at any given moment are dead in their homes and nobody knows it?
No, because no one's that grim on a Tuesday morning.
What are you talking about? This is grim. This is, hey, you better check in with us.
Well, how are you
going
to check on that? Door to door. That's going to take forever.
Scientists always have a way to estimate.
It'll take too long. But anyway, so yeah, the app is called Are You Dead? I should get that. If I didn't show up, you guys would check on me, right? Because it would be unlike me for just to not show up for work.
I'd send Pajeski over. I'm not doing it.
Why don't you send James O'Sullivan to go check on Amy?
James O'Sullivan?
Yeah.
He's not going to come out there. I don't know where he lives. Did you see, Amy, that today Chipotle
yes.
is offering free double protein.
So meat?
Double meat. Yes, because they have indicated that January 13th, which is today. So if you've gotten a bowl, a burrito, or a salad, you get double protein for free. That Tuesday is not a national food holiday or anything. It's that Tuesday is one of the most popular days to get swole.
So you need your...
I guess.
Are you joking?
No, it's what they say. So you need your protein.
Just on Tuesday? But what does that mean?
I don't know.
Going to the gym and eating protein on Tuesday?
I guess, but here's my issue with it.
Yeah.
You remember the whole thing from about a year ago or so where people were criticizing Chipotle for how terrible their portion?
Like stingy.
Very stingy. Yeah. Very stingy. I went about a week ago and I got to try to get a bowl. And I did. And I was like, yeah, you know, give me the double protein thing because you can get it. And I forgot how much more it is. And he was like half scooping each spoonful.
Oh.
You might as well have just used a soup spoon. Chipotle's still ripping you off.
You got to go to Qdoba. Qdoba's where it's at.
You must.
They open at 10:30 on Saturday.
They do?
Yeah, because I go after my long run. Well, and I'll sit in the parking lot until it opens.
Oh, gosh. All right.
And then I get a... Maybe giant, like, bowl or burrito.
I'll give Qdoba a try.
Qdoba's the best.
Because what Chipotle's doing is, it's bad.
Yeah.
It's yeah.
You gotta go to Qdubs.
Real stingy.
Qdubs, baby.
They need to fix that problem quickly.